Barátunk a reklám, ő következik.
Minden út egy utazás, és mi a Mazdánál arra törekszünk, hogy annak minden pillanata tökéletes legyen. Mazda CX-5 utolsó széria, 194 lóerős, 2,5 literes mild hybrid benzinmotorral, akár milliós kedvezménnyel, vagy kedvező finanszírozási feltételekkel elérhető. A finanszírozást az Euroleasing nyújtja, THM 4-től 4,9%-ig. A tájékoztatás nem teljes körű, a részletekről érdeklődjön márka kereskedésre. Mazda, Crafted in Japan.
Ez reklám volt. Szerettük.
Welcome everybody, it's the Triple Coverage podcast and also videocast. I'm your host Balint Kovács, and with me today there's a special guest, one of the greatest of the industry when it comes to NFL draft and draft coverage. My man, Mr. Trevor Sikema from the Draft Network and Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Thanks for accepting this invitation and for having you on the podcast. How's your day going?
It's going great. I appreciate you having me on. This is going to be a lot of fun for me. It was very cool to hear of how much you are a fan of the show and everything that we do at TDN, as well as your listeners. And so very much looking forward to this. This is going to be a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is a special edition of this videocast. It's the first time that we have a guy from the United States. So it will be a really special edition from this show. So you're a great and a huge Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. And yes, first of all, I want to ask something about your adventure of this Super Bowl trip. And how was it from the inside as a Bucs fan?
It was very fun to watch. I grew up just south of where Tampa is. And so I've been following Tampa sports my entire life. I had the pleasure of getting to work for the Pewter Report, which covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so I got to actually be a journalist covering the team full time for 3 or 4 years. And so I got a really great taste of that, being very close to the team, getting to cover them. And so actually, it's funny enough, this is the first year that I'm not covering the team full time and they end up going to the Super Bowl. And I think that's a lot of people like to tease me and say that I was the curse there, that I had to move in order for the team to do well. But it's all in good fun. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was obviously a very special team, crazy enough, with Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown and Leonard Fournette and all of these guys who you watch around the league for different teams for years. And then all of a sudden they're wearing Buccaneers uniforms at the same time. And so it was, of course, I think that they were fortunate to get Brady and to get a lot of those veterans, but hats off to Jason Light, the general manager there, to Bruce Arians, the head coach there, and even the assistants, of course, Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, and Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator. Everything just seemed to come together very well. The team building part of it, the roster itself, the coaching of it. And of course, anytime something like that happens and you get a talented room like the Bucs had, you have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And so it was very fun. I will say that, of course, I wish that the world was pandemic free and that all of the Bucs fans would have been able to go out and celebrate the Super Bowl the way they wanted to in Tampa, Florida, which was crazy as well, but it was very fun to watch nonetheless.
Yeah, it was a hell of a ride, kind of a Cinderella story from being a mediocre Buccaneers team to win the Super Bowl in just one year. It was a hell of a ride, and I don't know, I'm a Cowboys fan, and it's really, very hard to imagine winning a Super Bowl watching my team.
Hey, listen, I thought it would be very hard to imagine literally a year ago. One year ago, before they even got Tom Brady, I thought that there was no way I was going to watch a Buccaneers Super Bowl anytime soon. So who knows? For the Cowboys and whoever's out there, I guess everything can change if you just get the right couple of people.
Yeah, and what do you think about the future of the Buccaneers? Because everything feels like and seems like the team can stay together. The good guys, the big stars can stay together with Brady and Gronk and playoff Lenny, championship Lenny. If Godwin stays, if the O-line gets better, it could be another hell of a ride.
Yeah. No, so when you look at their cap space right now, I think they have around $40 million in cap, which is pretty good considering a team that just won the Super Bowl. And I think that, you know, again, going back to giving Jason Light his fair due and his praise because of how he has set up the team. And, you know, I wrote about this over at thedraftnetwork.com that you see a lot of teams like, for example, like the New Orleans Saints or like the Los Angeles Rams who really sell out their future to win right now. And not that that's a bad thing. Obviously, if they win a Super Bowl, they would tell you, of course, it's worth it. You know, you got a couple of bad years after that and you got to go into rebuild. Okay, but you won a Super Bowl. The Bucs didn't even really have to do that. They were able to stay healthy in their cap. And again, they got pretty lucky because when Tom Brady comes to town, he gets a lot of these guys to come onto the team for pretty cheap contracts. I think that when, you know, you brought up Godwin is one of the players they're looking at that's a free agent. Lavonte David's a free agent. Shaq Barrett's a free agent. But they have the money, I think, to bring all of those guys back. Now, the question becomes, what about the guys after that? Ndamukong Suh is also a free agent. Leonard Fournette's a free agent. Rob Gronkowski technically is. Antonio Brown technically is. And so how little of money would these guys be willing to sign for in order to all come back to make another run at the Super Bowl? I think they would all like to, but we'll see. It just depends on what they want to do. I think the big name guys, Godwin, Barrett, David, I think they're all coming back. It's just about those other names that I named there, whether or not all those guys come back as well.
And these guys may give a little of discount to Tampa because because of Brady. The main reason is Brady. It could be another long run in the playoffs for Tampa, and we'll see how it plays out. But let's talk a little bit about the draft because you're a senior draft analyst at the Draft Network, and I like these questions about draft analysts, draft gurus having pet cats of the draft. And could you please name five of them if you have?
First off, I want to say that when you called them pet cats in the email, I had never heard that term before, and I love it. That's great. I'd never, you know, normally they will call them like crushes or something like that. That's normally what I hear, but like I loved the term pet cat when I read that. That made me smile a little bit. So the first guy that I'll talk about, and I'll kind of go from guys who might be first round guys, and then we'll go further down into the draft. We'll make it a little easier that way. First guy I want to talk about, of course, I went to the University of Florida. I'm a Florida Gator myself, so I have to talk about Kyle Pitts. I think that Kyle Pitts is certainly, you know, to say that he is a pet cat of mine is not exclusive to other people. You know, I think everybody who watches Kyle Pitts realizes how rare he is. And yeah, sure, he's not going to be the full-time blocking tight end that, say, like a Rob Gronkowski could be, as we've watched over the years. But the ways in which you can use Kyle Pitts as an inline tight end in 12 personnel packages with multiple tight ends on the field, you can use him in the slot. You can use him even as an X receiver on the outside, on the line of scrimmage, dealing with press coverage. All of that becomes, you know, very valuable in what you do. And I think that a lot of times we like to talk about versatility and prospects, but we don't necessarily understand how that versatility comes out. Like we can't just look at a tall wide receiver and say, oh, they're just going to be great on the line of scrimmage, or they're going to be great against press coverage. When you look at a guy like Hakeem Butler a couple of years ago, and this is a guy that I got really burned on because I liked Hakeem Butler a lot out of Iowa State. And the fact of the matter was he could not figure out his releases in the NFL. When guys were starting to get up into his face and really disrupt the timing of his routes, he became ineffective and they didn't really know how to use him there. And so Kyle Pitts, I think, is the opposite of that. I think that he is great at getting off press. I think he's fantastic in his releases, as well as I think that you can disguise him and play him in line as a true tight end sometimes as well. So I think that, he is certainly the guy on the top of my list. And I wasn't sure. Do you want me to just keep going, name all my guys, or did you want to say some words about Kyle Pitts there?
How do you some words? How do you like the comparison about the new or the younger Darren Waller type of player?
Sure. Yeah. No, that makes sense because of how the Raiders are using Darren Waller, right? They have him as a tight end label, but they're moving him all around. They're giving him plenty of targets. They're emphasizing him in the passing game in a lot of different ways. And so when you look at that Waller kind of comparison, how he wins, how he is labeled as a tight end, but he moves so well for a tight end because he's got a little bit less weight and he gives up a little bit in the blocking game, but he gives you a lot more in the receiving game. For that reason, I definitely like the Waller comp.
Yeah, in a recent days podcast in the Journey to the Draft with friend Jeffy, he and Dane and I think Kist talked about the tight end position and they mentioned a landing spot in San Francisco and it would be a hell of an offense.
Yeah,
with a capable quarterback.
No, it definitely would.
Okay, then next one.
Okay, so my next one, I'll stay in the SEC. I'll go to the University of Georgia, and I'll go with Azeez Ojulari, the pass rusher there. I really like Ojulari because when you look at this edge rushing class, there are plenty of guys to like, but I feel like you could ask 10 different draft fans or draft analysts who they really like, and they might have a different answer for you who their top guy is. Kwity Paye from Michigan, of course, if you want a more stacked, stout, five-tech defensive end in a 4-3 front, he can be your guy. I think he's got the strength and the anchor to defend the run really well as have some pretty great athleticism and power to get by as a pass rusher. So he's a good all-around guy. Gregory Rousseau, the 15.5 sack season, playing at one tech, three tech, at edge rusher, as a wide nine. Like, he did everything at Miami.
But he's also,
I know, wild. And he's crazy. Very raw, though, of course. You know, he's played a lot of different positions. He hasn't been able to master one yet. And so I'm very intrigued to see how he gets into the NFL and utilizes that. Ojulari, I really like, and I wanted to shout out because where he is, of a little bit lesser weight, you're not going to play him in the same role you would like a Kwity Paye. You're not going to put him head up against an offensive tackle to really two gap or defend the run in that regard. You're going to let Ojulari attack the outside of an offensive tackle shoulder consistency. And when you do, man, his explosiveness, his natural strength, and his bend is very rare. And so that's a player who, when you look at an edge rush class, that there's no clear cut number one, right? There's no Nick Bosa. There's no Myles Garrett. It's kind of be a find your flavor kind of an edge rusher draft. I like Azeez Ojulari because he has those rare athletic traits that are really tough to teach.
Yeah, he said, if you beat the hands, you beat the man. And that's what his game is all about. And I really like Ojulari. I think The last game against Cincinnati, it was a great, great performance on the outside. And I really would like the scenario of him going to Tampa, replacing Shaq Barrett and longtime JPP. It would be a great fit, I think.
No, I agree. I think that would be fantastic. If they could somehow get their hands on him at 32, that'd be a good pick.
Would be a little bit difficult if he rises in this recent month, but let's go to the third one of your bad guess.
My third one is USC defensive lineman Jay Tufele. And Tufele didn't play this year. He actually opted out. And that kind of stunk because I wanted to really see him play. Benjamin Solak and I on the Locked On NFL Draft podcast during the summer, we do our summer scouting. Yeah. And we go through positions that we really like. And as we were doing interior defensive linemen going into the year, I couldn't help but watch Tufele and just see a player that had immense potential. When you look at him and you look at his size, he's a big dude, right around 300 pounds, about 6'3". And so, you know, he's got the size and he explodes so well for a player that big. And I remember watching, you know, as a Bucks fan, as a Bucks follower, I remember watching Gerald McCoy when he was coming out of Oklahoma and when he started his career as a Buccaneer. And the thing that was so rare about Gerald McCoy is that he was 6'3", 305 pounds, and could one gap you, get by you, and just go right in between interior offensive linemen before they even knew what happened. When I look at Tufele, I see so much short area explosiveness, so much strength, but it's untapped right now. He does not know what he's really doing yet. That's why I really wanted to see another year for him. But I know that he's going to be one of the younger players going into the NFL draft. And so when you get your hands on him, it's not like it's super wasted time here and there. He's going to need a little bit of time to learn. But I'm telling you, if you get a good defensive line coach with him, if you can teach him exactly where to use his hands and how to get consistent leverage and get the most out of that leg drive and that size, he brings you the athletic profile that you love. And so you watch his film and you see the flashes and you just go, whoa, guys this big should not be able to move like that. That's why I would say that he's definitely a pet cat of mine in this draft.
Yeah, he definitely flies off the line of scrimmage with power and athleticism. I really think he's a diamond in the rough. On the second day, I really think some team will take a flyer on him and draft him quite high. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really like his game too. So what about the fourth one?
Fourth one, I'll go back. So we're getting a little bit less here. So obviously, like, I'm not calling these guys first round prospects or anything, but these are some players that I do really like. I like interior offensive lineman Ben Cleveland from the University of Georgia. He is, you know, here's the best way I could put it. There was a picture going around of Ben Cleveland, who is this massive, you know, like 330-pound interior offensive lineman. There was a picture of him in the offseason where he was just on his boat fishing. And, you know, he's sitting there in swim trunks and he's got his shirt off and he looks stacked. Like, he looks like he's almost like a power lifter, bodybuilder kind of a guy. And so you just realize, you know, when you see that guy like that, you go, holy cow. You're not just 330 pounds because you've got it all around your gut. Like, you're just carrying a lot of fat. Like, he is a strong, athletic dude. And that shows up in his tape. I still think he's got a ways to go when it comes to turning his power as an interior offensive lineman into something that makes him a good pass protector. But man, if you want somebody to move you off the ball, if you are a team like the Buccaneers that runs a lot of duo and power running concepts where you're just bullying these guys up front, I think Ben Cleveland's going to be a great pick for a team in the mid rounds. Could be third, fourth round, something like that. He brings a lot of power to his game. And I'll tell you this too. You know, I've watched a handful of interviews with him. He loves football. And every single general manager, it's funny because I try to figure out what general managers and head coaches, like, what their like scouting sayings are, you know, like what their pillars of, like, oh, like, we're going to draft athletes, or like, we're going to draft guys that are outside the box, blah, blah, blah. Every single coach and GM they all say the same thing. We want guys that love football, because when you get somebody who loves football and it's not just a job to them, like, it is something that they enjoy, that they want to get better at, that they want to push themselves through. When you get those players on your team, those are the players that are teachable. Those are the players that you can get better. Those are the players that realize whatever their maximum potential is. I feel like Ben Cleveland's that kind of a guy. And so where I look at him right now and I go, okay, you've got a really good interior run blocker, still needs work in the passing game. Knowing his background and that he's just a dude who loves football, he's a country guy who just loves football, I got to think that he's going to continue to work at it to where he can get the most out of his strength and athleticism there as well.
I really think he's a starting plug-and-play guard at the first game, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I think that he is. Well, it depends, because, of course, he's got to be able to make sure that he's got good chemistry with the offensive lineman in order to pass protect, because you don't want to get the quarterback killed. But in terms of like holding his own, in terms of like getting knocked back off the line of scrimmage or getting big boyed in the NFL, if you will, that's not going to be Ben Cleveland. He's not going to get pushed around in the NFL. And so in that regard, I definitely would agree with you.
Yeah. If he stays in that power scheme and not with a team running zones all over the day.
Right.
He really is a starting caliber type of player in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So we arrive to the last one.
Last one, Oklahoma State wide receiver Tylan Wallace. I love Tylan Wallace. I was so big on Tylan when he was a sophomore, and man, that just feels like so long ago when I was watching him as a sophomore for the first time. And unfortunately, he had the ACL injury that sidelined him. And it was a big worry of what his athleticism would be outside of that. Because, you know, Tylan, for as much of a deep threat guy as he was for Oklahoma State's very vertical offense, he wasn't necessarily a burner. You know, like he wasn't going to run a 4-3 or maybe or even a 4-4 flat. He's slower than that with long speed, but he's so quick. He was so quick on his routes and he understood the position so well. He's got such great nuance. His route tree, I think, can be extremely diverse. They got him the ball in a lot of different ways. And here's something, too. You don't find a lot of wide receivers who are sub 6 foot who win at the catch point the way that Tylan Wallace does. And it's almost kind of playing off of what I was saying about Ben Cleveland. I just think Tylan Wallace is a football player. Like he brings that in his mentality every time that you see him on the field. And so outside of those things that I named, the reliable hands, the quickness, the nuanced route running, he's got a great mentality that I love. And so there, look, wide receiver is so deep. He's not going to be picked in the first two rounds, I don't think. I think he's going to be much more of a mid-round wide receiver. But I can't name a guy in this class, obviously relative to where they're going to get picked, that I would rather have as my wide receiver 3 or wide receiver 4 on a depth chart. Give me Tylan Wallace. I think he's a phenomenal dude to round out whatever your wide receiver room is.
Yeah, and he went to the Senior Bowl this January, and he showed us that he's not just a vertical threat. He ran a lot of horizontal routes, and he was a technician too in the in those categories. So I really think he's a starter caliber too, and he can show us that he's much more than a third round player or projection. So yeah, I really think he would be a great fit in some offense that uses vertical concepts and attacking deep. I really think he's a great guy. I wanted to ask about Max Borgi because he's not this draft guy. He won't enter the 2021 draft, but you and Ben talked a lot of about him, and if I'm not mistaken, he's your guy too.
Ben and I really liked Max Borgi from Washington State coming out because he was such a fun watch and he's unique, right? He's not the kind of guy, you know, like when you talk about running back, it's a lot like talking about tight end now, like we talked about with Kyle Pitts. Hey, you've got your Rob Gronkowski types, you've got your Nick Boyle types, you've got your Darren Waller types. There's all of these different kinds of tight ends that you can have to play in your offense and use in different ways. That's the same with running back, it feels. You know, like you have, everybody thinks about Najee Harris as this RB1 kind of a guy. And when you look at Max Borgi, it's funny because they're labeled as the same position, but they play two totally different games. And so he was going into the year, we were very intrigued because we loved his shiftiness. We loved how he was used out of the backfield. And there is absolutely a place for that on all 32 NFL teams. If you could be reliable out of the backfield, catching the ball, if you could stick your nose in there blocking and have good technique with it, even if you're a smaller guy, you're going to stick. You're going to be a third down back. You're going to be a rotational guy. You're going to be an RB3 and you're going to have a long career. And we thought, look, you know, if he has that as his baseline, if he has that high of a floor as a player, maybe he could be a little bit more. Maybe he could cut into some other playing roles as well. I mean, we saw a guy like Philip Lindsay from the Denver Broncos kind of come out of nowhere and really just work his way into what he did well at first and then got given his opportunities, made the most of them. And, you know, we've seen players like that, I think, throughout the last couple of years in the NFL. And so Borgi, I liked. He's a specialized back. He was more of a receiver, a third down specialist, but I was very intrigued by him going into this year. You're right.
Yeah, he's a great guy too. So let's turn our faces to the last segment of this show, talking about the first round of the upcoming NFL draft. What are your thoughts about this first round group of guys? How do you see going, for example, the first six picks ending with the Philadelphia Eagles? How many trades do you see? How many wide receiver picks, O-line picks? Which is your dream scenario coming from pick number 1 to 32?
There are two things that obviously are going to tell the tale of this upcoming 2021 NFL draft. One is, of course, how the quarterbacks go. You know, that's every single draft. They go as the quarterbacks go. And, you know, when there's one good quarterback or two good quarterbacks, the anticipation really isn't that great, because you figure the first one's going to be a quarterback at pick number one, and then the second best quarterback will probably go somewhere within the next two or three selections at worst. But in this draft, we got four. We got four good ones that we could talk about with Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance. And so you figure Trevor Lawrence is, of course, going to go number one overall, but then I think things get fun, even with the New York Jets. I don't think they're going to stick with Sam Darnold. I think that they're going to still pick a quarterback, but could be a guy like Zach Wilson there. And then, of course, I think the draft really comes alive at pick number three, because I thought the Miami Dolphins were going to trade back no matter what. Thought that was probably smart for them. But now Deshaun Watson's in the equation. Now, I mean, like, now you have no idea what could happen. So, I mean, are they making a move and giving that pick straight back to Houston? Is Houston then going to pick at three? Is Tua Tagovailoa going to be going to the Houston Texans? We have no idea at this point. And honestly, we're at the mercy of Houston's timeline, because Deshaun Watson's already signed. They already have Deshaun Watson. They don't have to make this trade. They don't have to make it before draft day or anything like that. And so I think that there's all kinds of interesting trades. You look at Atlanta, you think they're sticking with Matt Ryan. If there's a quarterback on the board, they could move back as well. There's so many different options there. I would tell you that I think three quarterbacks are going between the first six picks. And yeah. I will say that Trey Lance maybe not Trey Lance. I'll just say the fourth quarterback, I think, still goes in the top 10, but I'm not sure that we're going to get like the 1, 2, 3, 4, like some mock drafts have seen. Maybe we do, because there are a lot of teams that need quarterbacks, but that's probably how I see the top six shaking out right now.
And where do you see the fifth one? For example, if we count Mac Jones as the fifth, do you see him going in the first round, or how high?
I do see him going in the first round, but honestly, how high? There's no telling. I mean, I've seen mock drafts with Mac Jones going number four overall, which I think is absolutely crazy. Really I really do. That's bold. You know, when I think of Mac Jones, I look at these teams that are more towards the second half of the first round: Washington, Chicago, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh. You know, I look at those teams. Maybe
even New England.
Well, New England. So New England, then you get up to number 15, and I don't know. I don't know if Bill Belichick would be willing to. Now, of course, like, they need a quarterback, so they've got to figure something out no matter what. But does Bill Belichick believe in Mac Jones enough to use his first round pick on him? I'm not so sure. Belichick is very much the kind of guy who it's like, he's not going to waste a draft pick on a quarterback just because he needs one. Like, if he thinks there's a better option there, like trading for Jimmy Garoppolo or, you know, something like that, I think that he would make that move instead. I don't think he's just going to. We see Mac Jones in New England, and I think we're doing that right now in mocks because we go, okay, Mac's going to go in the first round. His hype has been rising. We're looking at number 15 and we go, okay, I'm comfortable taking Mac Jones and putting him in my mock draft at number 15. I don't want to put him higher, but I'm looking at the scenario individually and I'm saying, I don't think Bill Belichick would do that. At least I don't believe that right now. So I think 15 is a possibility, but I would still say, as without knowing exactly what teams want to do, I would probably tell you that I'd be more comfortable taking Mac Jones at the end of the first round, but we see teams reach for quarterbacks all the time. So maybe he ends up going top 15, top 12, whatever it is.
And that's when Kyle Trask comes into the conversation about reaching for a quarterback in the first round. Obviously another Gator alumni. And the last question, what's your dream pairing between prospect and the team in the first round?
Oh, wow. This is a great question.
Second half of the first round.
Okay, let me think of this. Dream pairing. I would love Zach Wilson or Justin Fields to get to work with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco.
Great.
I'm not so sure it happens, but I would absolutely love that. I would also really like, in the back end of the first round, I would love to see Pat Freiermuth, the tight end from Penn State, go to the Kansas City Chiefs. I would love for Kansas City to have these two tight ends that they could play at any time in line, in the slot, whatever it is between Freiermuth and Travis Kelce. And so off the top of my head, those are two that really come to mind that, man, you start thinking about, it goes beyond just where you put them. It turns into how you use those guys in an offense and how many things they impact. And of course, quarterback can impact an entire offense, but I think the Kansas City Chiefs could do a lot of damage on offense. You know, they're probably moving on from Sammy Watkins into Marcus Robinson. Mecole Hardman's really kind of proving that he's just like a speed threat. He's not going to be more. You get Tyreek Hill, you got Travis Kelce. If you throw Pat Freiermuth in there as well, you start being able to run a lot of multiple tight end sets, getting the defense in heavy personnel, not letting them sit in nickel as much as they want to. But then at the same time, you got speed on the field, both out of the backfield and with Tyreek Hill. So that's an idea. That's Benjamin Solek's idea. I heard that from him, but I've absolutely loved it. And so those are two that kind of come to my head.
It's great. They have to outbid, for example, the Jacksonville Jaguars, because Urban Meyer brought his former coach from Penn State, from the Titan coach. And I really think they are eyeing Pat with their second pick.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But in Kansas City, those two tight ends and those weapons around Patrick Mahomes, obviously would be a great, it's a great offense, but would be much, much, much better with that type of receiving and blocking tight end. So yeah, thanks for joining me. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with me and our listeners and viewers. It's a great honor to have you on our podcast and videocast. Yeah, really the first time we can do this. So
the honor is all mine, man, honestly. to hear that you guys are not just fans of the draft, but also fans of what we're doing over at the Draft Network and our show on Lockdown NFL Draft. I mean, that honestly means the world to me. And so it was great joining you. The pleasure was all mine. I really, really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. And to our listeners, find Trevor at Tampa Bay Trey on Twitter. You can find him on Instagram. Listen to their podcast on Lockdown NFL Draft. You will find a lot of information, a lot of good talk, and also Friend Fridays, which are great shows.
So we do love those.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for having you on the show. We'll see, and we will see each other the next time. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Ez a műsor a Béton közösség tagja.